Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I hope everybody enjoys the content we're providing here. I hope you're learning something. I hope you realize that we have to understand. We can no longer marginalize our Constitution and what the Constitution means. And what I mean by that is not in an ambiguous sense of what it means in our everyday lives, but what it actually means line by line, word for word. You know, I'm not one of those that, you know, subscribes to, you know, how words can hurt us or anything like that. You know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me, you know. But I'm here to tell you that we have to understand precisely what the framers intended those words to mean. And the only way to do that is by reading the ratification debates, because that's where they actually discussed it and described it. They actually explained what all of these words meant. And they just didn't do it because they were doing us a favor. They were doing it because they were laying down the terms and definitions of the Constitution in a contractual form. What that means is that these descriptions are legally binding. Now, today, what I'm going to do, because I want to try to set the stage, because I have been marketing and marketing and marketing, but what I really want to do, and I'm going to we're going to go through an interview we had with Alex Newman regarding the education system. And so what I want you to do is realize just what the heck is going on in our education system. And so when we come back from the break, I'll kind of get into the details of this social process that occurs, because, you know, they don't start introducing really disdain and, you know, hatred towards the parents at kindergarten. Your child goes through a process. I mean, even you probably remember when it was no longer cool to hold mommy's hands at school. I mean, if you went to school back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, whenever, you reached a point when it was no longer cool to be mommy's little boy, mommy's little girl. Well, they understand that. They understand when they can start challenging those paradigms that your parents are giving you without you feeling like your parents are under attack. And they understand how to do this so that they can convince you to look at your parents as the bad guys, especially if your parents are really good guys. In other words, if you have one of those parents that is Christian and actively involved in their religion and their faith, then there is a good likelihood that your children are being programmed into believing that you are the bad guy. Because what you want to do is you want to take away their good time, their ability to sexually express yourself. And oh, by the way, they believe that's a civil right. No, it's not. And as a matter of fact, we used to have decency laws and so forth. That's because we were a society of enlightenment. The way you tear down enlightenment is you take away those types of restrictions and barriers that we put into disciplining ourselves to ensure that we're not debasing ourselves. They take away those, and what they do is instead they put in place enabling type of laws. This is why we see people, you know, there are so many people that are in the wreckage and wake of the debasement of our society, where families are being broken up because of sexual promiscuity and or these concepts of transgenderism, gender morphing, and so forth, where kids are being irreparably damaged, or they're getting to a point where and this is great if you want to become a mental therapist, because there's going to be lots of people that are going to need help. And I am telling you that the Psychological Association, or the APA, and organizations like that have been instrumental in assisting with the deterioration of our mores. Now, The real reason why we're doing this today is, one, because my throat is completely shredded, but we're going to, on Monday, we're going to do our Christmas special. Then we'll get into the marketing on Tuesday, and Wednesday we'll probably, maybe, I don't know, we may re-air the Christmas special. We will definitely re-air the Christmas special on Christmas Day. We would invite you to play this with your family, because we're not here to kick Santa Claus, but we're here to help you focus on really why supposedly they've instituted it and how we can actually take the higher ground into what they have done to us regarding this time of year, the holiday, and so forth. And so with that, we're going into break, and we will be right back with Alex Newman and our conversation on education. So please stay tuned after these two promos. We'll be right back. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so, folks, I have Alex Newman. And, Alex, I know you can talk about a lot of things, but I know lately you have been talking, and I think you've been writing. Do you have a book, by the way? Let me ask you that real quick.
I do, yeah. I have several, actually. And I have one on the topic of education, which has been really my area of focus, especially this year and probably for the rest of 2019. I'm going to be really hammering on this issue. So my book on that is Crimes of the Educators, How Utopians Are Using Government Schools to Destroy America's Children. I co-wrote it with Dr. Sam Blumenfeld. And then more recently, Dr. Duke Pesta, who runs the Freedom Project Academy, university professor, regular guest on Fox and that right. type of thing, and also Israel Wayne. So the three of us kind of collaborated to create this special report in the New American Magazine called Rescuing Our Children, where we systematically expose the public school system and then offer parents solutions.
Okay. I'm very interested in what you offer as solutions, but let's first talk about the problem. I think
The problem really began, I don't know if you get into a historical context, but it kind of gets into the mid-1800s, early 1800s, when a lot of the churches started abdicating their responsibility of some of these compassion services, i.e. education. And so they started relinquishing that to the local communities. And by the mid-1800s, there was, I don't want to say a crisis, but there was this lack of anybody taking ownership other than local communities. If they had kids, they didn't, or what have you. And so that's when the government kind of stepped in to kind of take over education.
Yeah, well, you know, it just seems like you know more about this than probably 99.99 out of 100 Americans. But yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, the idea of a government education would have been just unthinkable 200 years ago. You know, if you had told an American that one day there would be a law that you have to hand over your children to the government for 12 years of mandatory so-called education, they would have laughed at you, you know, maybe locked you up in an asylum.
Right.
And then along came Horace Mann.
There you go.
You know, an early American socialist. He had gone over to Prussia, and he saw how the regime there, the dictatorship, was brainwashing children, you know, by the state, for the state, in the state, uber alles. And, you know, we saw where that went in Germany, obviously nowhere good. But the Horace Mann brought that crazy idea back to the state of Massachusetts. And he was appointed the first ever commissioner of education in any state there in Massachusetts. And he basically created this, the nucleus of what would eventually become the government education system. And, you know, it certainly didn't look anything like the monstrosity that we have today, but it was the genesis of the government's role in education in the United States.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely a creep, a slow building, collectivizing, pulling more and more in until today we have Common Core. And so, okay, so great. Do you get into that type of history in your book, or do you guys just kind of, what's the focus of your book as far as the problem goes?
Well, in the book, we don't talk too much about Horace Mann. We actually dwell a lot more on John Dewey.
Okay.
John Dewey, of course, you know, if you look on Wikipedia, they call him the founding father of American public education. And so, you know, Horace Mann kind of laid the groundwork. He laid the foundation. But then John Dewey came along and really, I mean, I don't know if hijacked is the correct word, because he and Horace Mann were pretty like-minded, even though, you know, Horace Mann was much more radical at the time in relation to, you know, mainstream society. But John Dewey came along, and we focus on John Dewey extensively in the book. In fact, probably more than half of the book deals with John Dewey. But in the special report we did on education, we have a whole article on the history, and we spent quite a bit of time on Horace Mann, and then we switch over to John Dewey to just basically give the history. You know, I think
right.
Putting this all in context requires an understanding of how we got here. You know, at one time, and we spent a lot of time also just looking at the data we have on education and the anecdotes on education in the United States before we had a government system. And what you find is that we had almost universal literacy. I mean, America was by far the most literate society to have ever existed on this planet. You know, no question, far and away. Young Americans could read, they could write, they knew their history, they were learning Greek and Latin and some of the Hebrew so they could understand the scriptures, advanced mathematics, you know, useful trade. Of course, they were all thoroughly familiar with their Bibles. And, you know, today we spend more than $1 trillion on this monstrosity called an education system. And probably about half of Americans are either illiterate or so close to illiterate that we might as well lump them in the same group because they're never going to read anything. And, you know, it's getting worse. It's getting worse and worse. And so we do focus extensively on the history of how we got here and, you know, for multiple reasons. And then we also have a whole nother article on where we're going. And so when you see that whole kind of timeline of how this all began and where this is all going, with the United Nations now taking over the public education system, not just in the United States, but around the world, you can kind of get the sense of the enormous difference, the contrast between what used to exist and what we're moving toward.
Right, right. Now, to me, the big difference between Mann and Dewey was Mann was just a person really trying to improve something that he thought really needed improving, where Dewey was an ideologue, Fabian.
Precisely, yep. And, you know, one of the things that's so remarkable about these two characters is what a long paper trail they left, right? John Dewey just filled books and essays and scribbling with his ideas and his ideology and his religious faith. In fact, he was a very religious man, not in the sense that we typically think of a religious person, but and he was proud of it. You know, he was one of the authors and one of the signers of the first Humanist Manifesto. It was, you know, about 30-something people who signed this document. And right off the bat, they say, we religious humanists, is the term they use to describe themselves, believe that the universe is self-existing and not created. And so they were telling you right off the bat, you know, if you open up your Bible, it says in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So right off the bat, they're telling you that, hey, we want to overturn the faith upon which the United States was founded, you know, the Christian religion, the biblical religion. Right. And that's one of the main reasons why he wanted to hijack control of the government education system, was to break down the biblical religious beliefs of the American people, to break down the amazing education, the high literacy levels that the American people had, so that he could transform it. He actually went to the Soviet Union and saw what Lenin was doing. He was very, very pleased with how Lenin was churning out little collectivists using the government indoctrination system. And he wanted the same thing for America. He actually told us that he wanted America to look like the novel Looking Backward. It was a fantasy, a fiction novel about the America in the year 2000, basically a communist America with no private property, no religion, et cetera, et cetera. And this was his ideology. This was his religion. Right. And with money from the Rockefellers, he very successfully took over the teachers' colleges and got you know, the textbooks published the way he wanted them. And the rest is history, as they say.
Right. So let me ask you this. When did that manifesto get written and signed? Do you know off the top of your head what year?
Oh, yeah. The Religious Humanist Manifesto. That was in the 1930s, if I'm not mistaken, the first one. And they've come out with several editions since then. But they all, you know, kind of follow the same line. They basically make communism their religion, with, you know, some crazy doctrines like this idea that, you know, man is a god and things like that. So, right. So yeah, this has been with us now almost 100 years.
Right. Now, and the only reason I asked that question was I was trying to put it in context to the Scopes trial, because the Scopes trial was really the first time the federal government took jurisdiction unconstitutionally, because they brought in that argument over evolution, where clearly there's no enumerated object in the Constitution that gave them jurisdiction. So they assumed that jurisdiction. And every time we allow them to assume jurisdiction, we always lose. So anyway.
That's right. Yeah, and, you know, then they gave the coup de grace in the 1960s, you know, 1962 and 1963, they banned prayer, they banned the Bible,
right.
And you know, the reasoning was so ludicrous, right?
Sure.
They cited the First Amendment, and of course, we all know the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law, not you know, local school district or state legislature shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And in fact, the Tenth Amendment made it quite clear that if the powers are not delegated to the federal government, they're retained by the states or the people.
Right.
And so the Supreme Court had to twist itself into pretzels and say, well, the 14th Amendment incorporates, you know, all the rest of the Bill of Rights and forces it on the states. And, you know, what a ludicrous interpretation of the Constitution. In fact, at the time of the founding, probably half of the states had established churches. So the idea that the First Amendment would prohibit Bible readings or prayer in local schools is outrageous. And yet, right, that was the beginning of the end. You know, as one of the dissenting justices, Justice Stuart Potter, wrote, this didn't lead to, you know, neutrality with respect to religion. This led to the establishment by the federal courts of this religion of secular humanism.
Right. And so, being very familiar with how they kind of crept this along, they knew that Congress couldn't make any law. But when the Supreme Court makes a ruling, it's technically not a law, but it becomes law, because they have smeared the boundaries or the separations of power between the legislators and the court. And so that's why they kind of worked together. There was a symbiotic relationship. There has been a symbiotic relationship between the courts, Congress, and the president. Whichever one is carrying the mantle of moving the progressive or this communist globalist agenda forward, you know, they would take that on. Like the president, like the last president was very big in moving that mantle forward. And Congress is, you know, just kind of sitting there just supporting it, making sure that the money's going where it needs to go and so forth. And the Supreme Court will come along later on and support it with new rulings or what have you. But anyway, I digress.
Exactly. Yep. And, you know, the Constitution is quite clear that all legislative powers at the federal level are delegated to Congress. And yet, you know, you have even ostensibly conservative constitutionalist justices like Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, just appointed by Trump. They say, oh, yeah, Roe versus Wade, that's the law of the land. Excuse me, when did the Supreme Court, when did we change the Constitution to give the Supreme Court the power to make law? Last time I checked, in my Constitution, all the legislative powers were for Congress. And so, you know, that shows you how, first of all, dumbed down and indoctrinated our population has become, that people don't recognize this as a massive usurpation.
Right.
And second of all, it shows you how out of control the courts are.
Right. And so, I'm not going to go down there, but I just want to throw it out there that because most people think that, you know, what I'm doing with Republic Review is just going after these departments and so forth. No, a big part of it is also going through all the rulings to find out how the court has overreached and created laws that have not created necessarily departments and so forth. But anyway, so you get into all the history. And so as we've identified the fact that you probably get into Common Core and the curriculum as well.
We sure do. Yep. In fact, I've gotten to know the two experts who sit on the Common Core Validation Committee, who sat on the Common Core Validation Committee pretty well. I serve on a board with them. I've interviewed them. You know, they had one English language expert, and that was Dr. Sandra Stotsky from the University of Arkansas. And she said, hey, I'm not going to sign off on this. This is terrible. You're going to reduce the critical thinking abilities of children. You're going to take out all the great literature. You're going to have kids reading like executive orders and EPA regulations on roof insulation. Sorry, no, right? That's ridiculous. So she refused to sign off. And then on the math side, they had Dr. James Milgram, a mathematician from Stanford. And he said, no, this is confusing. It's nonsensical. It's as non-challenging as possible. And some of it's based on incorrect math. Sorry, but I'm not going to sign off on that. So the only two subject matter experts on this validation committee for Common Core refused to sign off. They ratified it anyway, right? They just forced it on all the states. And one of the big things that we focus on in our special report, Rescuing Our Children, is that this is actually part of a global initiative. See, a lot of people look at this and they think, wow, that's the nationalization of education. And it was, you know, in a very real sense, a further nationalization of the education system. But it is also the globalization of the education system. And so we spend quite a bit of time in the article or in the special report explaining how we are now moving toward a global education system with the UN's education agency, UNESCO, really dictating global standards on education. And, you know, if you break it down and you actually dig into what they're doing here, you know, I can just give you a few interesting points on what's happening. So the UNESCO now has what they call the World Core Curriculum. And the guy who wrote this World Core Curriculum, his name was Robert Mueller. He was the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. He said in the teacher's manual for this World Core Curriculum that it was based on the teachings of Alice Bailey. And of course, Alice Bailey was the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company. So, you know, you kind of get a sense of where these people are going with this.
Right.
She would summon these spiritual entities. She called them ascended masters. And they would write these books through her about education in the new age and how we're going to move to this one world government and one world religion and all the rest of it. So, you know, these people are absolutely bonkers, but they have successfully hijacked the education systems of the world.
Right. So let me ask you this. We can read the curriculum that they've written on paper, but I submit, and I've been telling my listeners, that there is a, I'll call it a secret curriculum, where they institute these things that they've learned from Rules for Radicals and those, how to be an activist in the classroom. And because I've, and I'll just give you a little backstory, so forgive me for doing this, but
No, not at all.
A friend of mine in California told me about his problem with his son all of a sudden hitting high school and how, you know, he hated his folks. And I mean, his folks have been doing everything they can to kind of encourage him with education, embellishing him and other things and so forth. And what has ended up happening is I have a friend up in this area where I live now, that's very similar. I went to talk to him and his family. We were doing some work, And his kids acted like they had just disdain for their father because he was the authoritarian Christian in the home. And so it, to me, it seems like they're teaching like a hoodwink. They're teaching like this secret agenda that the Christians are the ones that are trying to take away your good time. They're the people that you can't trust. You know, remember, more people died in the holy wars of Christianity than anything else. And all of this fake, I'll just call it fake propaganda that they've been feeding kids, because I've noticed that it seems like more and more kids in Christian homes are becoming more and more hostile towards their parents.
Oh, that's exactly what's happening. And, you know, if you look at the data that's out there on this, you see that something like 80% of Christian children from Christian homes who go to a public indoctrination program for 12 years end up leaving the church. They become, you know, not just un-Christian, they become anti-Christian. As you said, they become hostile to Christianity, to their parents, to the truth, to the Bible, to God's design for marriage, to, you know, everything that God has ordained, right? God ordained marriage, God ordained family, God ordained private property, God ordained nations. And so you have these brainwashed zombies coming out of school thinking that they arrived at these conclusions on their own, who just literally want to overturn all of that. And, you know, our civilization will not survive a few more generations of this indoctrination. I mean, we are now in an existential crisis where if we hope to preserve our civil...
Alex, are you there? I can't hear you anymore.
...civilization, our liberties, our republic, it's going to depend on dealing with this.
So...
Oh, that's very strange.
So one of the things... You cut out for a quick second. That's okay. One of the quick things I like to point out is the numbers that are stacked up against us.
Can you hear me, GR?
I can. You're fine. You're back. It was just a real quick drop. The numbers in school, and I mentioned this to you before we started this, that every year there are about 4 million kids coming out of the education system. And I've kind of played with the numbers of how many, what's the percentage of these kids that want to throw away their liberties? And you gave me a number. I think you said something over 80%.
Yeah, are the Christian kids from Christian homes who are leaving the church after government school? Yep.
Oh, well, I'm just saying, out of all the kids that are graduating, going into the electoral process in our previous conversation, because I'm pointing out that if you add up 4 million from 2012 a year to 2020, well, that's what, 32 million? Is that right?
Yep.
And so if you add up from 2020 to 2030, that's going to be, what, another 40 million. That's 72 million kids that have been put into the pipeline in voting. And if you look at how they vote and how they've been programmed to vote, I tell people that these kids are foaming at the mouth, they're weaponized, and they are programmed to throw away our liberties and our culture, just like that. And so I'm actually anticipating, and I'm forecasting for everybody, that by 2024, we had a blue wave in 2018. I'm not sure if you knew this. Did you know that?
I did. I saw it, yep.
In the state races, a little bit of a blue wave in Congress, but the huge wave was in the state legislatures. And what I believe is going to happen in 2020, we're going to see the same thing. We may see Trump get reelected just because he's a populist. But in 2024, I think it'll be a completely different story. And I think by 2022, we'll find that most of the states are starting to turn, except for the dark red states. And so we don't have much time before there is enough critical mass, because the illegal aliens, I live in a state unlike yours, I live in a state where the DMV has been deliberately giving driver's licenses and registering illegal aliens. California is another one. There's plenty of states. I believe even North Carolina, in the big populace like Charlottesville and so forth, they're actually giving away the DMV and registering to vote illegal aliens. This is a real problem. And if you start adding up all the numbers, they're looking for a huge landslide to steal the election and to get America to rip the Constitution out and get rid of it and discard it for political expediency.
That's exactly what's happening, GR. And so we make the case in this special report, in the beginning and the end, that If we don't take urgent steps to address this, we're going to lose every single battle that we care about. You know, and we talk to the gun owners and to the pro-life advocates and to the people who want to stop the New World Order and the people who want to reduce taxes and, you know, prevent socialism. You know, every single one of these things, we are slated to lose on every one of these fronts if we allow this to continue. And you're right, it is coming very soon. You know, they're now on the verge of turning Texas blue. They've got Arizona now almost. They've got Florida almost. I mean, you will never elect another conservative Republican to the presidency of the United States without divine intervention if we don't address this existential crisis. And, you know, we argue in the New American Magazine special report that you know, there's only one solution here, and that is for massive numbers of Americans to get their kids out of the system. You know, all these people, all these organizations wasting all these millions of dollars on trying to reform the system. The system's doing exactly what it was designed to do, right? You can't reform something that's working perfectly. What we need is kind of a Dunkirk operation where the whole of society, you know, parents, grandparents, neighbors, aunts, uncles, pastors, everybody gets involved in rescuing our kids, pulling them out of this wicked system that is destroying them, that is corrupting them, and that is destroying our nation. And, you know, absent something like that or divine intervention, I think you're right. I think pretty soon here we're going to see conservatives losing every national election. And at that point, you know, there will be no going back until who knows when, you know.
So I asked a friend, and you may not know him, but he's just up the street from me. He lives up by Atlanta, Georgia. His name is Mark Urbach. He wrote a book called Believe, Does America Need a Third Great Awakening? And he's also an educator. And his book was very focused on how the federal government has overreached its bounds in court rulings, jurisdiction, and so forth by, you know, the separation of church and state and actually enforcing godless secularism. I'm writing an article now that proves the point that the federal government has established a national church a long time ago, and they've been edicting that you must believe secularism, that there should be no God in front of or before secularism. And so, and I mean, I do an academic argument of how we were a Christian nation and how we slowly let it go and how the evil doers had literally taken over and undermined us by using the government. And they never built a church, but they used the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school as their Sunday school. And so,
And you have humanists who brag about these things, right? They write in their magazine about how the classroom is the key battlefront in this war against Christianity. Actually, one of them called the rotting corpse of Christianity.
Right.
Is going to be completely destroyed by using the government school classroom. And you know, this is what they've been doing. In fact, this is what they were planning on doing even before they succeeded in establishing these schools. We quote in the special report a whistleblower from the early 1800s who was collaborating with these socialists. And, you know, he became a Christian. He repented and he came out and blew the whistle on what they were up to. And he said their plan was to create a national system of education that would be used to destroy Christianity under the guise of, you know, education. And that's exactly what we've seen, and that's exactly what we're seeing.
Right, right. So this is what I suggested to him, and I'll share it with you as well. I honestly believe that a curriculum can be devised that because I think there's a lot of good Christian families that are recognizing that their kids have become their enemies, and the kids are completely oblivious to it because they don't hate. When I was in this guy's home, the kids would actually talk to me and they would listen to me, but they heard zero. Anything that came out of their father's mouth was completely vile and rejected. But when I started talking, they actually really, and we had a cognitive conversation, and it actually blew me away how they were programmed to just hate their parents. And then all of a sudden, somebody, a stranger, could actually reach them and they go, I didn't realize that. And then all of a sudden, you know, it kind of helped shift a little bit. I believe that somebody can come up with a curriculum and a plan to start exposing that these kids don't know that they've been programmed to hate their parents. They don't know that they've been programmed to hate the culture of America. And so I believe that somebody can come up with a good, quick curriculum to help teach these kids, you know, why is it that you feel this way towards your parent who's saying this, but this total stranger that now telling you these things, you actually accept that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. One of the things that Dr. Pesla and I have been talking about for a while and we intend to move forward with eventually is a kind of, you know, boot camp for victims of government schools. You know, it's a poor kid went to school, the quote-unquote school for 12 years and got brainwashed on science, was brainwashed on history, knows right. nothing about civics or how the government is supposed to work or the U.S. Right. Constitution or anything. We want to create, you know, just a box set of DVDs that will systematically show the kids, you know, here's what you were taught, here's why that's wrong, here's the effect it has had on your ability to think for yourself, on your understanding of the world, on your worldview. And, you know, it's maybe a crude analogy, but we want to kind of deprogram cult members. You know, there's been some controversy around those kinds of efforts because, you know, sometimes they get pretty intense. But you have these people who are just totally enraptured in these cults, and you know, to try to get them out of those cults is a difficult process, but there are people who've studied this, and unfortunately that's the level that we're dealing with now. You have these poor kids who've been just stewing in this propaganda for 12 years, you know, 6-7 hours per day, 5 days a week. They know nothing other than that. And so to try to bring them out of this indoctrination, out of this brainwashing, and help them to, you know, see reality, it's a very worthwhile goal. And so we're putting our heads together now, trying to figure out what is the best way to do that. What are the subjects that we need to tackle? You know, clearly we need some civics and some history and some science. It's going to be a huge task, but the reality is if we don't do it, our country, our liberties, we can kiss them goodbye.
I think the most powerful thing, and I truly believe this because, and I'll share this with you. There's nobody in the world that loves that, rug crawler, whatever you want to call their child, right? There's nobody in the world that loves that child more than their parents. And to That's think right. that the school system has come in and duped them into saying, we care more about what's good for you than your parents, and have convinced them of that. And so I believe the most powerful message that we could probably send that would actually wake these kids up is showing them through a little skit, through a little demonstration, that you can have a stranger literally go through a script and sharing information that completely contrasts the things that they've been learning that their parents have probably told them. And then, you know, have them actually accept that and then point to them that these are the exact same things that your parents have been trying to tell you, but you have been programmed to hate them. And that's why you feel the way you do. And so, and you can actually show, because one of the things I was telling my friend is if we videotape that so that we could actually, you know, the kids could actually sit down and look at how they were looking at their parents with hate and disgust. And then they opened themselves up to a complete stranger. And so why was it that they were expressing those kinds of emotions and depicting those types of sentiments? And I truly believe that some type of a curriculum like that, it doesn't have to be, you know, you want to have the education because they're going to need something to take care of the mush between their ears. But I do believe that there's a very, the power of love of the parents and the child, I think, can be leveraged as a huge tool in helping wake these kids up.
Yeah, that's huge. And actually, I appreciate the insight very much. I think that's, you know, it's really powerful and it's true. And one of the things that we look at in the special report, too, is how they bring this about. You know, how do they take these kids who, you know, their parents try to bring them up believing in certain moral absolutes, you know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not lie. How do they turn around and just flip these kids, you know, so that they do a 180 and suddenly they think that, you know, morality is subjective. And, uh-huh. You know, sometimes the moral thing is to do whatever. And they've actually gotten very good at this. You know, they studied behavioral psychology. And one of the things we focus on is the values clarification program that they use. Now, the UNESCO recommends this for use in schools all over the world. And it's very insidious. You know, they tell the kids, hey, imagine yourself in a lifeboat and there's, you know, there's eight of you in the lifeboat and the lifeboat can only carry seven people. So now, you know, there's a doctor, there's a lawyer, there's an Indian chief. You know, what are you going to do? Which one are you going to kill so that all the rest of you can survive for the greater good, right? And then the kid thinks, well, wait a minute. You know, my parents said, thou shalt not kill. And that's what they said God said. But here, you know, clearly the only moral option is to kill somebody. Otherwise, we all die. And so the kid's moral foundation just gets shattered. And, you know, right. They've done a lot of studies on this. They've been doing this now for decades. It's extremely effective.
Right.
And, you know, all the kid had to do was think outside the box and think, well, you know, what if I just jump into the water and we just take turns, one of us swimming alongside the boat until we get rescued? I mean, that would have been much simpler than killing somebody. But the kids are being told this is the confines within you which you have to think.
Right.
And it's tragic, you know, the division that it puts in between parents and children and parents and their family. It's, you know, you're right. And hopefully the love can bring them back to sanity. And you know, we need to hope for that because, again, if we can't deal with this, the consequences are going to be absolutely catastrophic.
Well, they are. And I'll say this, because being a person that understands Revelation and so forth, we all understand that, you know, most everybody's going to be fooled, that we're going to have a lot of people buying into the scheme. But it doesn't say much about America. It does talk about other nations and or cultures, the dragon, bear, and so forth. But it doesn't say much about us. And I believe that we actually, and this is what I say in my second book, my third book's not published, but I talk about the fact that America is going to fall one way or the other. Either we fall into, I will call it austerity on our own terms, or we fall into the hands of the globalists, where we will be ensnared and trapped and enslaved, that no culture will be able to break through, because muskets aren't muskets anymore. They have a level of technology and an unlimited bank of being able to rain down any type of terror upon any individual, group, citizen, geographical area. And so it's not like we can just easily revolt. I'm telling these preppers, you're spending your money and your efforts in the wrong spot. You've got to start getting active and getting out and getting involved. And so that's, you know, that's why I see that, that we actually have an opportunity. We have a choice. And I truly believe it's not a coincidence that our framers gave us a contract, a limited contract, a specific contract, an enumerated contract instead of a general contract. And so anyway, I believe that the Lord knew that in these days that we would mature with contract law and so forth, that we would get to a point where we could recognize how our contract has been completely torn and violated and go back and say, no, we're holding you to the contract because we can.
And yeah, we need to. The Constitution either means what it says,
right,
or it doesn't. And if it doesn't mean what it says, then theoretically we have arbitrary government, and that's simply unacceptable. So we need to go back to what's written there, and it absolutely needs to be enforced. And anybody who refuses to, you know, uphold their oath of office, these people put their hands on the Bible and they say they're going to uphold the Constitution. Anybody who refuses to do that, anybody who defies their oath, it needs to be removed and, in my opinion, punished.
Yeah, I can give you more. You've only seen a little bit. But one of the things that have you ever read Madison's essay on property?
You know, I don't know.
Where we have a right in our property and we have property in our rights. And it's a very powerful essay. I think he did it in 1792. I would highly recommend you look at it, read it, because it puts perspective, because he says our most precious property are our ideas, our thoughts, our expressions. And so one of the things that I like to point out, because every culture and everybody gets this, that if you bought a painting in a garage sale and come to find out, you know, it's just a worthless painting. But when you remove the frame and you remove the canvas, underneath that is an original Van Gogh. And what do? Do you say, oh, I'm rich? No, because the ownership of that Van Gogh goes to somebody very specific, and they can easily find out who the original owner is. And it's the same thing with the Constitution, that we know that these are very limited powers, that they can't do that. And the ownership of those powers are the states, as you mentioned before. And the states can easily reclaim those to say, see, you were never given those legally. You have no title to those. That is not your property. It is ours. And that's why I say in that property essay, we have property in our rights and rights in our property. So anyway, I really appreciate your time. You got anything else or any other parting comments? I'd like to have you back on. You're actually going on a whirlwind tour for four months, I believe. And so I'm hoping that we can get you back on in the near future. But my friends, We're literally running out of time, and as you can hear, I've got that hard break coming. So please stay tuned, and I will be right back after this hard break. Thank you so much.
Become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Well, okay, so I hope that you start to see just the importance of what Alex is doing, what so many people are doing in trying to get the word out. I'm not going to take the time to necessarily promote my books or anything else, but what I do want to do is I kind of want to get you to understand the teacher-student relationship has become literally a poison to our society, because if you understand the nature of nurturing or educating a child, because basically when you're teaching a child, you're nurturing them. They feel like you're giving them something, and they construe that as love. And so it is a very dangerous space that we are in today. And so I would just say this, that if you understand the nature of nurturing and educating a child, then you have to start questioning. And when I say questioning, you have to start questioning the motives behind that person. Because as I have told you, there is no way to unwire ideologies from a person. In other words, their biases will drive home and they will connect the dots one way or the other for your child, so that your child understands if you're a God-fearing Christian and you believe, in a good moral society and so forth, they will paint the picture that you are the enemy to your child. So don't even become surprised if your child, as they become older, absolutely hates you, distrusts you, and lies to you, or even if you're not even recognizing it, those things are there. Unless you are actively seeking the opportunities when you have the quality time with your child, want to prove to them that you love them more than any other person on the earth, that as parents, you are doing everything you can for them. And as parents, when they are done with school, you will still be there for them. And that long line of teachers who have passed the baton from one teacher to the next teacher to the next teacher, that line is gone. And the damage is done unless, like I said, you help your child maintain that perspective of who you really are and who they really are. They're not parents. And you got to understand, your child actually thinks that their teachers love them. And in some weird, sick way, these teachers really believe that they do love them, that they're doing these kids a great service. This is why we've gotten to a point with technology and everything else. There's no reason why more people aren't homeschooling. And or there's no reason why we have not revamped our entire education system. I mean, corporations have completely revamped. And I'm not talking about curriculum. I'm talking about mechanisms and so forth so that you don't even have to send your kids to school hardly at all anymore. That you should be able, why is it costing us so much to maintain these old, I mean, even malls are dying by the wayside because retail is one of the last things to go. My friends, we have to start understanding where we are and what we're doing. I only have a minute, but I will say this, that Adam Weishaupt knew exactly what was going on. And as a matter of fact, a man by the name of John Robinson discussed in his books proofs of a conspiracy against all the religions and governments of Europe. He talks about Adam Weishaupt's plans for his Illuminati. And Adam Weishaupt said this, princes and nations shall vanish from the earth. The human race will then become one family, and the world will be the dwelling of rational men. They're going to use tolerance. And as a matter of fact, the great strength of our order lies in its concealment. Let it never appear in any place in its own image, but always concealed by another name and another occupation. Establishing reading societies and subscriptions, libraries, and taking these under our direction and supplying them through our labors, we may turn the public mind which way we will. The education system will teach tolerance. And this is what he says, quote, we must win the common people in every corner. This will be obtained chiefly by means of the schools and by open, hearty behavior. Show condescension, popularity, and toleration of those prejudices which we shall at leisure root out and dispel. I'm here to tell you, my friends, that the education system is really a poison. And I hope you take this time during the holiday season when you have more access to your children to prove to them who you really are and who their teachers really are. I'm G.R. Mobley. We will be back. We're reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.